Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I just hate to think of her last moments as being with somebody she didn't know and being completely fearful. Really, I want to be able to bury her. I want to have a memorial for her. At this point, the only thing that I know of, on our side of the family at least, that we have for her is I have a tattoo. But, you know, we don't have any headstone. There's nothing for her. I know deep down, I'll probably never actually know 100% for sure what happened. And I really don't care to actually know. I want to bring her home. That's it. It doesn't do me any favors to put the blame on anybody. But what's done is done. It happened so long ago. If I did find out who did what, I would hate them for the rest of my life. But what's happened is happened. There's nothing we can change. We can only do what we can do now, and that's try bringing her home, try finding something. I want to be able to have a site that I can visit, somewhere I feel like I can talk to her.
On September 14th, 1990, 10-year-old Casey Perry disappeared while visiting her father at his home in Portland, Oregon, after the two had a disagreement. In part one, we learned that it's believed that Casey made it to a store just blocks away from her father's house, possibly to make a phone call to ask someone to pick her up. Witnesses spotted her at this location, and her belongings were later found there as well. It remains unclear if Casey was picked up by someone she knew, or possibly went with a stranger. But in the early days of the investigation, one person close to her mom stood out. His name is Brian Keith George. And nearly a year after Casey disappeared, he was arrested for a bank robbery and had something shocking to tell investigators. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 281 of The Vanished, part 2 of Casey Perry's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere. While traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Brian Keith George is a name that just keeps coming up in this story. He had dated Casey's mom and remained close to the family after their breakup. The morning following Casey's disappearance, he showed up on Michael's doorstep and inserted himself into the case as somewhat of a family spokesperson. He's even quoted in a September 20th, 1990 article in the Longview Daily News, saying, "We're covering every possible angle. We're hoping she's still okay." He went on to say that they were in the process of raising money for a reward for Casey. Michael told us more about Brian Keith George's behavior at the very beginning.
I didn't know him at all. You know, apparently he was a friend of the mother's. I still don't really know anything about the man, but he showed up, and me being as devastated as I was over the whole thing, I really did not want to, you know, spend the time talking to news reporters and everything that. So he was actually kind of, he came in and he was kind of gutsing at first, you know, because he was handling everything. He was delegating people and sending them out on search parties and having people put up flyers. And he was actually acting as the spokesman to the news at the time.
You know, so he was doing all the interviews. I didn't really think anything of it. I mean, I was glad that he was doing it. It was shortly after that that we noticed that it was kind of a strange thing that after the news would come on, you know, these interviews would be recorded and he would just watch them over and over again, watching himself on TV. And I thought that was strange. I thought it was strange. My friends thought it was strange. And that's when it finally, that was before my private investigator had told me about him. And we just thought it was strange.
Sometimes we see in cases, after they're solved, that the person responsible was inserting themselves into the case more than what we would consider to be normal. Was Brian trying to keep tabs on the police investigation, or trying to get attention from the media? Or was this just innocent and Brian Keith George simply wanted to help the family? He had grown close to Casey over the years when he dated her mother, and afterwards remained in their lives. At the beginning, people just thought that he wanted to help find Casey. Well, it wouldn't be until August of 1991 that things took a shocking turn. Brian Keith George was arrested for a bank robbery that had actually occurred in September of 1990, the same month that Casey disappeared. The robbery occurred in St. Paul, Oregon. Brian Keith George and another man robbed a bank with nylon stockings over their heads. They were armed, one with a knife and the other with a gun. After his arrest, he made a startling confession about Casey. Here's Michael again.
When I got the phone call saying that they think they know who it was, they have somebody that confessed to it, and they believe that she was dead from the day that she left because of the confession of this fellow. That was Brian George. All I know is part of the confession is that he assaulted my daughter. So I never got details of the interview, of the confession. All I know is that the police, on the night that they called me at home, told me that this fellow, this individual, had confessed to raping, murdering her, and burying her in a shallow grave. And I believe they said the word strangulation, but in hindsight, I could not swear to that. In my heart, I do. I believe that his confession initially was true. I can't imagine anything in the world that would make him confess to this. And recanted his story there was because he said he just wanted to get interest back in the case. He sent these people on a wild goose chase then to Kelso, Washington. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, you know? It really doesn't. So, I mean, you got a person that confesses to this thing. She's been gone all this time. Yes, I do believe that's what happened.
Brian Keith George's confession made sense to Michael and to the police. Investigators already had him on their radar prior to the confession. They too thought his behavior was strange. But since he recanted and they couldn't find anything where he said her remains were, the case just went cold again. We know that coerced confessions do occur, but Brian never claimed that to be the case. He went on the television show A Current Affair and said that he made it up to get more attention to Casey's disappearance. Does that even make any sense? Casey's friend Amber told us that she finds this all to be a bit too odd.
Casey's family remained close to Brian Keith George, which was Casey's mom's ex-boyfriend, but he remained close to the family and the kids, so he floated in and out quite frequently. And that would be the only other person that I knew the actual name of at Tammy's house, Tammy's Casey's mother. And that next day, Brian Keith George showed up to distribute flyers and whatnot to help look for Casey. And then you fast forward a few months later, and he was incarcerated on a burglary charge and a bank robbery charge. And while he was in custody, he came forward and stated that he had murdered Casey and concealed her body for a few days, and that he would give the police where her body was located. So the police went out and checked the location, and they found some bones, and it turned out they were animal bones. Then he went on national television, this Brian Keith George, and recanted and said, no, I didn't hurt Casey. I just said that or whatever. Then he backtracked. And then it's pretty much went cold since. All law enforcement will say is that they have a suspect that they think they just don't have any way to prove it. And that's pretty much where it's set.
Michael also mentioned to us something unsettling that an investigator found at Brian's home.
He was looking for people of suspicion. And, you know, he said that he actually went out to the place where Brian George was living. And he said a very odd thing was when he went into his living room, he saw a collage of pictures of my daughter sitting up on the wall in the living room. Very creepy.
We know that Casey was spotted at the store not far from her father's house on the night she disappeared, and her belongings were later found there. Going back and trying to connect Brian Keith George to Casey's disappearance, how would he have known to come pick her up? Alyssa told us how she thinks this may have played out.
I honestly think that if in fact her and her dad got into an argument, which I can see Casey doing because she's very headstrong, got into an argument over Casey moving there. Again, I'm assuming that her moving there was because he didn't like the way her life was at home. And after reading the news, some of the news articles and the postings and that kind of thing, yeah, that was the case. I'm thinking that within just a couple of minutes of her going to bed that night, she was out the window. And again, she's very street smart. She knew how to, you know, not how to handle herself, but she knew the street life, like the possibilities of things happening. Like she wasn't scared to do things like that, to walk at night or, you know, whatever. And I'm sure she got out that window. She walked down to the payphone at, what was that, Canal store. And my guess is she called home. And her mom, from everything I remember and talking to Amber and stuff, her mom didn't have a car. I believe the only one that did have a car was Brian George. I'm guessing that she called and that was the one person that could come pick her up.
The search of the area where Brian Keith George confessed to disposing of Casey's body took place in a heavily wooded area near Kelso, Washington, just over 50 miles away from where Casey was last seen in Portland. We know from Brian's trial for the bank robbery that he was living in this area around the time that Casey disappeared, with a girlfriend at her father's home in Kelso. An August 19, 1991 article in the Longview Daily News documented the search efforts that were put forth to find Casey in Washington. About 70 trained searchers came out and scoured the area, but they only found animal bones. At the end of the day, they felt confident that Casey wasn't there. While they didn't find Casey, if you look at satellite images of the area, it's very densely forested. It's a vast wilderness that seems to go on forever. If he did kill Casey, maybe they simply didn't look in the right spot, or perhaps he lied about the specific area. After this development about Brian Keith George dried up, the investigation into what happened to Casey seemed to go cold, and stay cold. At the time, Amber and Alyssa were just little girls, and they didn't know the details of what was going on with the investigation.
I feel like Brian Keith George killed Casey, without a doubt, that night or within a couple of days. I've always felt that, even as a little child, as soon as the news broke. And my grandmother, unfortunately, is dead now too, but she had kind of befriended Casey's mom a little bit because we'd have Casey sometimes for 4 and 5 days at a whack. Her staying with us. As soon as the story broke about him confessing and whatnot, he was already kind of suspected. Rumors on the street, people talk, you know, that his name came up in conversation as the adults were sitting around the coffee table playing cards. His name would come up even before that. And then when he recanted, it was like a major blow to everybody. It was like, whoa, no way. You know, we thought we were going to have some closure and be able to bring her home and give her a proper burial. And as far as I know is that within, you know, a couple years after Casey going missing, it pretty much, you didn't see anything on media. You didn't see flyers. You didn't see, it's just like, let's just sweep it under the rug and move on. At this point, we both feel that Casey's dead. We just want her remains brought home so we can have closure in Casey. We have a place where we can go put flowers. I remember them coming and asking questions. I can't remember exactly what questions they asked or didn't ask, because it was pretty traumatic. Your friend just is gone. You know, we just got told, you know, she's missing. We were trying to find her. And I just remember crying and crying and crying and just sobbing to the point where I couldn't even talk, because it was just instantly, I guess, in my gut, I knew that I'd never see her again. And as a 10-year-old child, I felt that and knew it. And I was right. Here's 30 years later. And every birthday, my birthday is May 27th and Casey's is the 31st. And every birthday, I just feel so guilty because she's still nowhere to be found. It's almost like a survivor guilt. It's like she didn't get the chance to pick a bad boyfriend or go to prom or have her first baby or get a driver's license and learn how to drive. And then for nobody to freaking look for her. It's just, it's not right.
After this time, Casey seemed to become a memory for her young friends. Alyssa explained this from the perspective of a child at the time.
And I feel bad because as a kid, you know, it was kind of like I knew she was missing. And I'm assuming for months afterwards, I asked, you know, about her, if they'd found her and, you know, all that. And then after a while, it just kind of faded away. Not her memory, but the fact that she was missing kind of faded away. And then my dad got really, really sick. So there was about an 8-year span there where I'll admit I didn't give Casey space in my brain or any of that, because I was taking care of my dad. And when it was 1 month and 1 day before I turned 18, my father passed away. And just kind of like, I just didn't have the mental state to really think about it. And I feel really bad now, but I don't know if that's gotten me to the point where I'm at now, where I'm like, I want to find out at least where she's at to give her proper burial kind of thing. Because I'm assuming she's dead. I mean, I don't know, but I honestly, I don't feel that she's alive. Like, I just don't feel that. It wasn't until, gosh, really the internet, you know, really took off and like I looked up information, you know, I entered in Casey Perry, you know, into like Google search or whatever. And that's when I was like, there wasn't much out there regarding Casey and like her disappearance. But I do remember reading an article about she hadn't been found, you know, essentially like there was nothing saying she had been found. And so with all of my life stuff going on, you know, throughout the last 30 years and whatever, she's never left my mind, you know, and especially here lately, her disappearance has kind of really taken a good chunk of my emotions and, you know, my thinking throughout the day. Like I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm like, okay, I got to jot this note down. Or she's been taking up a lot of space, which is totally fine with me, in my brain, you know, just regarding everything.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs. and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. Casey's brother on her mom's side of the family, Troy, told us his thoughts on Brian Keith George and how he ran into him later in life.
I went to prison and I met him through passing. I was at EOCI. I was going from the east side to the west side. He was coming from the west side to the east side. So we were in passing. And he broke it down like, I'm sorry, I said what I said. Please don't do anything. Please don't do anything. I wanted to get publicity on the case, and I wanted to try to escape when they took me out to look for something like that. And I said, you know what, dude? I forgive you for now. I was getting ready to program, and I needed to get out of prison, and I got out early because of not just taking off or, you know, really what it was going to do to the guy, you know, give him a black eye or something. I told him I forgived him, and I just kind of threw my hands, you know, like, get away from me, like shoo, and I kept walking. And that's my experience with that guy. But I remember, I kind of remember as a kid, he promised me and my brother that we're going to go to the fair or something, and it fell through, and I just remember not liking the guy from the get-go, and I don't know why, but I know that Brian accidentally killed his uncle or something and got manslaughter for it, and he served 9 years, and then I don't know how you can recant the story after putting a story out, but I think there's truth in some of what he said, that maybe he didn't kill my sister. But I damn well know that he did help dispose of her or whatnot. I mean, why else would he be there the morning of her disappearance to help look for her? He shouldn't even know about it, really.
While other theories remain about what happened to Casey, Amber told us that she believes Brian Keith George is responsible.
So he was very prevalently involved at Tammy's home and in and out. And I do remember him picking Casey up from my house a time or two when she was staying. I think Brian Keith George did it, and I felt this way forever, as long as I can remember. And I don't understand that. A man admitted to murdering her. Why aren't you pressuring law enforcement? Why aren't you pressuring him? Here, Brian Keith George was in prison for manslaughter. It got released. He arm robbed a bank with another guy. I don't know if he was the one with the knife or the gun, but he was still had a weapon, held the bank teller, you know, at knife or gunpoint to give him all the money. So they catch up with him. And this was not even a full year since Casey went missing. It might have been right at a year. This was in 91. Casey went missing September 14th of 1990. I'll never forget that day. And he openly admitted to murdering her and holding her body for a few days. Who does that? Who admits to murdering a child for no reason? And the other mysterious thing with this is Casey went missing that night, September 14th. Brian Keith George showed up at Casey's dad's to distribute flyers the following morning in Portland. They were not friends. That was Casey's mom's friend, not Mike's. And, you know, he was in prison a long time for that bank robbery. I think he got like 10, 15 years or something like that. And I found a mugshot for him out of Jackson County, literally last year.
Alyssa has similar feelings about Brian Keith George. It seems unfathomable to most people that he would admit to such a heinous crime if he didn't do it. Brian saying that he only confessed to get more attention to Casey's disappearance just doesn't add up either.
You know, he admitted to it. That should have raised some red flags. You know, I know that people admit to doing a crime that they didn't do, but we're talking about a missing 10-year-old, you know? I know it happens. Like, I know it does. It's just like, I just can't imagine. It just seems like it got swept under the rug. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, he admitted it. But, you know, no big deal. No, he recanted. To me, that should have warranted further looking into.
As previously mentioned, Brian Keith George has been in and out of prison for much of his life for offenses such as manslaughter and bank robbery. One of the more bizarre crimes that he's been convicted of was breaking into a police station where he stole guns and a bag of evidence that was part of an investigation into a murder of a 13-year-old girl. Why in the world would he take that evidence? Another man was later convicted of that murder, so it remains a mystery why he chose to steal that evidence. His behavior during the trial appeared to be erratic. He fired his attorney and represented himself, despite warnings from the judge that it was a bad idea for him to do so. While he was under investigation for that break-in, he offered to testify against a former police officer. He claimed that officer was planning a murder-for-hire plot to kill the police chief. Several agencies investigated his claims and found no evidence to support them. While we don't know why he did any of these strange things, is this a pattern for Brian George, making up stories to get himself out of other crimes he has committed? While many believe that he's responsible for what happened to Casey, and even I admit that he looks like a strong suspect to me, too, I have to wonder if a jury would be able to convict him based on his recanted confession alone. Does the possibility of a stranger abduction while hitchhiking leave too much room for reasonable doubt? Especially considering that Casey may have had a history of hitchhiking and expressed to Alyssa over the phone that she was planning to do just that. There are many things that we wish we knew, but weren't able to get answers from the police department on. Was his car ever searched? What about his home? Or even phone records? If they have more evidence on Brian Keith George, we don't know about it. They may have more evidence that they are keeping close to the vest in order to protect the integrity of their investigation. When Brian Keith George recanted his confession, he pointed the finger at Casey's dad, Michael. Michael seemed to back out of the spotlight. He found the accusations from the man who had confessed to killing his daughter to be deeply painful. Since that time, he's been hesitant to participate in any media about Casey, and her mom, Tammy, doesn't speak to the media either, so it seemed like no one was advocating to keep her story out there.
Casey's case hasn't got, initially, America's Most Wanted did an episode about a year after she went missing. And then there, the only other media coverage I've been able to find was the cold case files in 2017. Local news media in Portland, Oregon ran a little blip on it. Not a video, but a write-up, an article. And that was about it. Unfortunately, her biological father has kind of been shamed into silence from early media coverage and whatnot. And the mother is a lifelong drug addict. And I can kind of see how her dad stays quiet because he was slandered. He has had the finger pointed at him by Tammy's side of the family and that Brian Keith George, that he's almost been shamed into silence. And he probably feels really guilty for how the argument got started between him and Casey, sending her to her room, waiting an hour before checking on her. I understand that it's very painful, and I could not imagine what he feels like because I'm just a childhood friend, and it eats at me literally daily. Each year you get older and you get to experience things like she didn't get any of those things. I just can't see letting more time go by without getting it out there and somebody squeaky wheel gets the grease, I guess, is how I'm looking at it. And with her case, there's a lot of, it seems, a lot of closed doors. You know, it's like, oh, well, it's sealed. Oh, and I don't know, maybe the grand jury's sitting on something just waiting. You know, that guy, I always think, well, maybe that's why. Maybe because there's more to it behind the scenes that I don't have access to.
Amber told us that when she grew up, like Alyssa, she too began her own search for answers. She just couldn't let it go. She wanted to know what happened to her friend so many years earlier.
I did try to get a hold of law enforcement, like when I just got pregnant with my son. So I was like 19. And, you know, a 19-year-old's calling about a case, and I was pretty much, the door got closed on me immediately. You know, they wouldn't tell me anything. They wouldn't even talk to me about it. And I'm like, well, you don't understand is that I was her friend, and this is something that is stuck with me my whole life, to the point when I go walking by myself, I carry a can of bear spray because you just never know. But I've done some digging. I have definitely spent hours and hours and hours searching, and I just get totally discouraged because there's very limited information.
Amber and Alyssa had been doing their own searching independently until very recently, when one saw posts that the other had made on social media. The two women joined forces to keep pushing for answers.
So I've been posting on social media and all that, essentially my story of Casey, like kind of asking for help, you know, hey, you know, maybe your dad, maybe your mom, maybe your neighbor, maybe somebody lived by then. Somebody knows something. Maybe somebody talked. Maybe someone saw something. And so I started posting about her there. And that's when Amber's like, hey, you know, I've been doing this too. And we had both apparently been doing it just by ourselves. And so her and I connected, and then it was just like everything kind of just took off.
Casey's brother Michael told us that when he grew up, he became interested in learning more about what happened to his big sister. After looking at everything, he told us who he thinks is responsible.
Really, most everything that I know or that, you know, I believe I know are things that I've, you know, researched myself over the time. Details I've been told from my father, mainly from my mom. She thought of Casey as her own daughter, even though, you know, they weren't actually related. My mom took it just as hard as anybody else when she went missing. And still to this day, she tries her best to keep up with everything. And she hears anything new at all, she lets me know that she's still in the area there. The man who confessed at the time, Brian George, he keeps me up to date if he goes back to jail or is released and then back to jail again. He knew the family through Tammy. I know that before he had confessed, he was actually one of the leading members of the search parties going out looking for, which I've always found kind of odd and suspicious that somebody would admit it and then recant it, being that close of a relationship and being as involved as he was. I don't see a reason why he would confess for no reason. I've always believed that he was responsible, beyond the fact that he confessed at the time, just the fact that he actually knew her, that from what I was told, it was suspected that he was the one that got the last phone call from her from a payphone at the Keno store that she was last seen at, which was a local chain out there in Portland at the time, because the Keno was right across the street from the park where they had been searching for her and sending divers into the lake to try finding her there. The violent history that he had, because I believe it was less than a year later, he had gotten arrested for attempting to rob a bank and injuring a security guard there. Just the continued history after the fact. I know back in, I believe it was 2000, the police tried reopening the case against him. Apparently, his girlfriend at the time, Brian's girlfriend at the time, the police thought that she had known more about the situation and were trying to get her to testify against him in court. And they had flown my dad in back into Portland to be there for that. Nothing ended up coming of that. Local police have always believed it was him, even though they couldn't come up with enough to actually charge him. I don't know exactly what makes me want to believe it was him. I guess I just want to believe that it wasn't some complete stranger that took her off the street. I don't believe that she would have gone with somebody off the street. I think somebody would have noticed somebody forcibly taking a little girl right off the street like that in front of a store, because I know she knew him. I would hate to think of how much worse the situation would have been for her. Had it been somebody else that, you know, she would have been more scared in her last moments if it was somebody she didn't know. I tend to think that if it was some random event, some quick thing that happened, that there would have been something left behind, more evidence showing that there would have been more left behind than just her backpack, that there would have been something showing a sign of a struggle, maybe, you know, clothing on the ground or something.
There hasn't been much communication between Casey's father's side of the family and her mother's side. Her father was unhappy with Casey's living situation at her mom's, and her mother blamed him because she disappeared while visiting his house. When Brian George recanted, he accused Michael of being the one who harmed Casey. All of the finger-pointing has affected everyone, and is one reason why several family members don't speak to the media or are hesitant to. Michael told us why he thinks it's hard for his father to speak about Casey.
He doesn't like to talk about it. He doesn't get really any farther past tearing up, and he gets like me. He gets emotional and the words can't come out. I know she was his first out of all of us children. I know deep down she was always his favorite. He always felt a special connection to her because at one point it was just the two of them for a little while when she was really young. I know because he was 17, I believe, when she was born. He was left alone with her for at least a few months. So I know that he always felt that extra responsibility towards her and that extra connection. Every time I look up anything to see if there's any secondary story or any update on any of the websites that have stories about her, it always tends to say the same thing, that it's always one-sided towards people trying to accuse my dad of it. And I know whenever I have tried talking to him about it, he always feels as if somebody's trying to accuse him again. He just feels like it's another set of people trying to point fingers again. And I'm trying to convince him that all anybody wants to do is bring her home. Really, I want to be able to bury her. I want to have a memorial for her. At this point, the only thing that I know of, on our side of the family at least, that we have for her is I have a tattoo. You know, we don't have any headstone. There's nothing for her. I don't know if Tammy did anything of that nature for her. I would wish or hope so. I obviously haven't been in contact with that side of her family after any of this, and nor would they want to be in contact with me, because I know her other brother, Troy, was convinced that it was my dad, and I don't blame him for having thoughts one way or the other. I have my thoughts. He has every right to his. He was fed a certain amount of information like I was. Sometimes you only know as much as you're told.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop, with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. When we spoke to Casey's other brother, Troy, he told us why he believes Casey's father is responsible for what happened.
I believe in what was been told to me, not because it was told to me by a trusted person or whatever, but it was told to me by two different psychics that she was dead and that my sister came to them in a form of a little girl in the back of their car and two different incidents. This has been told to me by two different psychic ladies that her dad killed her and he ran her over with his pickup or whatnot. And then I don't know about Brian George, what his involvement in it was, but I know that he was there the morning of my sister's disappearance. And so he has something to do with it. And it's like, I've wanted revenge for my sister since the day she disappeared. And I didn't really understand it, but I just knew someone took my sister from me. I remember being mad at my mom for letting her go up there. She was my best friend.
Despite what psychics have said, there's no evidence supporting the theory that Michael killed Casey. However, it's easy to understand why Troy harbors resentment and suspicions, because Casey disappeared from her father's home. We can also understand why the blaming has made Michael hesitant to speak out. We live in a culture where people comment on news articles with opinions and assumptions, without thinking about how those words may affect those close to the case. Other rumors were spread that pointed to Casey's mother. Troy found these rumors to be particularly hurtful.
The rumor that my mom sold my sister, just like she sold my other sister. You know, my sister was adopted out as when she was born, just before Casey disappeared, I believe. And that was really hard on my mom, too. You know, she just she gave her child up for adoption to these people. Then her daughter disappears. And, you know, I think that's one a hard thing, too, on my mom. I know the person that did make that allegation itself, that my mom sold her or whatever. You know, I know the dude, and he's a real piece of work. But, you know, that's just a cesspool. Salem, though. Salem's full of it. There's a lot of ugliness in Salem. I did leave Salem. Life has gotten better since I moved away from Salem. You know, I still have my hardships and everything, but it's just like the funk is gone. My mom's a complicated. I don't blame my mom for anything. My mom could kill somebody. I'd be like, it's not your fault. My mom and my dad, I'm the same. You know, they could do no wrong to me. You know, I love them unconditionally, and I feel that way about my brother and my sister and my other sister and my little brother. Literally, it has fucked my mom's life up. Like, there's no going back from the fucked up my mom has experienced over this. But I know she gets kind of emotional, and she might say some shit she don't mean. Or whenever I talk to her about it, I have to come at her, you know, as a matter of factly, or as not to get my mom's emotions worked up over it, because she'll just cry and cry and cry.
Casey's disappearance has impacted both sides of her family. Her brothers were just small children who couldn't fully grasp what was happening. They grew up trying to make sense of it all. For Troy, he watched as the world around him began to crumble, and he later ended up in foster care.
My family came from poverty, you know, and I've always lived like in a tent or a small apartment or a motel. And I remember being homeless and living in a tent. But before that, we lived in a house. I watched my mom go to shit. I mean, like, I watched her go from, you know, this happy, lifeful person to this mean alcoholic. And then she lost us. Foster care. I was 10 when she lost us. It fucking pissed me off so bad. I mean, it was good. I went to a Paula and Gary Winnell. You know, they were good people. They were a priest and she was a teacher. It's still not the life I was meant to live. I went from me and my brother and my sister to 11 brothers and sisters. Just watching my mom go from a happy, joyful person to a angry alcoholic, it's heartbreaking. I mean, she's cool now, but it's been years since her daughter disappeared, and she still hurts over it. You know, she was young when she had Casey. She was only 16. I've had substance abuse since I can remember. You know, from cigarettes. I started smoking cigarettes at 10, and I would steal them from the Safeway because they were at my height, and it made me feel better, I guess. And then I started smoking weed at like 15, and then I was introduced to meth at 18, and then every other drug. I used drugs in the beginning because of a sprained ankle, but it has drowned out my feelings and I guess helped me forget. I tried killing myself 3, 4, 5 years ago with heroin, and my life was looking up until my sister disappeared. And, you know, I just went upwards, 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 and then my sister disappeared, and, you know, I just been left with an empty void.
Having Casey disappear during early childhood has also had a profound effect on her brother Michael as well.
I have been told through previous relationships that I'm a little too overprotective when it comes to women due to that. And children, I probably ran to the rescue in situations that I should have thought about first. Screaming children that you want to make sure that, you know, they're actually with the person that they're supposed to be with. And whenever I see a kid in the grocery store screaming at the top of their lungs, I have to make sure that that's their parent that they're with. It's always made me think twice about actually trusting anybody. You never know who's capable of what. If assuming that it was Brian, you know, knowing a 10-year-old girl that close and being able to do something like that to her, you just never know what somebody's capable of.
Michael remains hopeful about the future as technology and search techniques continue to evolve, that just maybe there could be a breakthrough in Casey's investigation somewhere down the line.
I know that they sent out many, many search parties across a lot of different areas, including the ones that Brian had told them that he had dumped her body off at, and where they ended up finding nothing. And I know now, 30 years later, that they have technology now that they did not have back then to look underground for any possible remains, stuff that maybe a dog may not have been able to sniff out. I don't blame the police at all for not being able to find her. If there's evidence, it's there. If it's not, it's not. I know that they continued to try finding stuff long after. Like I said, they tried reopening charges against him back in 2000. 10 years later, they were still trying. So I appreciate that from them. I never had any bad experience with them out there. They were always looking after the people in that town. They are top-notch when it comes to actually treating people with respect and realizing that we're all human beings and everybody deserves the attention that's due to them. With everything you hear nowadays with the child abductions and sex slavery, that's one of my most fearful thoughts. Like, it may sound bad to say, but I'd almost rather just find out that she was gone, that she didn't have to suffer anymore. I would like confirmation one way or the other, not ever having a body, ever having closure. I just hate to think of her last moments as being with somebody she didn't know and being completely fearful.
Casey's father, Michael, told us that he's come to terms with what has happened to Casey, as much as any parent who has lost a child can.
Well, you know, I've had to come to terms with it. I mean, it's taken a long, long time for me to live with this whole thing and, you know, to get myself past it. And, you know, going a long time trying to believe, you know, that she's out there somewhere, but I'm a realist, you know. I'm sorry. I believe that something would have turned up if she was still alive, you know, with everything being what it is. It just makes sense that what has been told to me was what happened. And I think since the police have, or you know, the DA had tried to do a grand jury trial type thing with him that did not pan out, that they just decided until they have the physical evidence, her body, that they aren't going to try to prosecute him for this because they don't want to, you know, have him not be prosecuted and then have her turn up or whatever. And which, you know, I'm kind of in agreement too, you know, that it would be bad that, you know, he would be acquitted of this before it really had a chance to get him. It's not like they didn't try with a grand jury trial, though. They did without her. So it just didn't work. Do I believe it, you know, after this long a time? I have my doubts. Unless somebody brings authorities to her, which may still happen. Who knows? I'm praying so. And, you know, it does seem like after a while, you know, when you finally do start not having to, you know, think about this every single day, which is happens every few years, you know, that, you know, this comes back into light, you know, for some reason or another. And then it just tears you at you. And I don't believe that that's ever going to end for me and my family. Nobody should ever lose their child. It's the hardest thing in the world to do. I really do wish, you know, and hope that that she has recovered. I've told my wife, you know, that as much time has gone by, it's more important to me that she would be found than somebody being punished for this. And so I would be willing, as her dad, to suggest or be okay with giving immunity in order to find her. It's just something that I come to terms with, because what I believe, the person that I believe that is responsible for this has been in jail for almost as long as probably what he would have been in prison for if, you know, he would have been found guilty in the first place, confessed to this. So in a sense, like I said, I would be, you know, willing to tell the DA that I'd be okay with that if we could give her a burial, put her to rest. And have an end, you know, put an end to this. I don't think it could be any worse than what I've already been told happened and what I believe happened.
So what happened to Casey Perry on September 14th, 1990, after she ran away from her father's home in Portland? We know that she likely made it to a nearby store because some of her belongings were found there, and witnesses believe they saw her at the store. Search efforts in the area didn't lead to finding Casey, and the theory emerged that maybe Casey called someone and asked for a ride, or perhaps she got into a car with a stranger. There had been alleged sightings of her along the highway, but none of those have ever been confirmed. While anything is possible in this case, after Brian Keith George confessed to killing Casey and later recanting, many of those close to Casey believe he is the one who is responsible. However, as far as we are aware, they have never been able to gather any physical evidence to support this theory. The loss of Casey has devastated both sides of her family, along with the friends who have never forgotten her. To me, that's one thing that stands out about this case. We can tell by listening to those interviewed how devastating this has been for the family and also the entire community. Everyone we spoke to has been profoundly affected in their own ways. But they all believe that finding Casey could help bring them some measure of peace in their lives. If you have any information about the disappearance of Casey Perry, please call the Portland Police Bureau at 503-823-0000.
So Alyssa and I have made an agreement that we're not going to stop until we find out what's going on.
We want to shake some bushes because we're losing time. People are aging. Witnesses are dying. They have to be, because if they were 40 then, they're 70 now. And I just feel like the clock's ticking, you know, like we're running out of time. And if Brian Keith George is the person that did this to her, he's 62 years old. I want to see him die in prison, not free.
Right now, I have nothing, not one single thing of hers that to remember her by. I have one single picture locked away of me and her when we were children, and that's all I have. No matter the explanation, then it'll never be a good one. It's gonna be sad and hurtful no matter what. There's no good reason behind it. It's a loss that shouldn't happen. There's plenty of horrible people in the world, and a 10-year-old girl is pretty much as innocent as you can get.
I don't think there's ever going to be really closure on it, just because, you know, it's a distant memory, and a painful one, but it's still a distant memory. On the opposite end, I want to believe she's still alive, and that maybe she was offered a better opportunity, or, you know, just something to where she's still alive.
That brings us to the end of episode 281. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from British Columbia. Thanks for listening.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid. We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.